For 36 years, the Goldman Environmental Prize has celebrated everyday heroes who are showing us that every action has the power to turn apathy into positive change for the environment. Heroes like Bastiana Gurri and Olsi Nika, who helped create Europe's first Wild River National Park. Visit us at goldmanprize.org to discover the stories of this year's Goldman Environmental Prize winners. And learn how when it comes to protecting our planet, the doing makes the difference.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for members. Signature Select Classic Ham, shank half or whole, bone in while supplies last, just 89 cents per pound. Enjoy 1 pound strawberries or 6 ounce blueberries, raspberries, or blackberries. Buy two, get two free of equal or lesser value when you buy four. And mix and match Nabisco snack crackers, Ritz crackers, Cheetos, Doritos, Tostitos, or Sun Chips, selected varieties and sizes. Buy two, get two for free when you buy four. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Coming up in about a half hour, you'll hear our conversation we had with the general manager of the Kansas City Royals, J.J. Piccolo. We asked him about the concern level with the offense right now. We asked him about MJ Melendez getting sent down to AAA and what they would need to see from him, what he has to improve on if he were to get back with the big league club. Plus, we talked about what they are getting out of pitching right now, both the starting rotation, of course, and the back end of the bullpen. So we'll bring some of that to you again coming up in about 30 minutes as the Royals do begin a homestand tonight out at Kauffman Stadium. Vern's On Deck show gets going at 5:30 right here on 96.5 The Fan.
If for those who are wondering about the Cody and Gold road trip, we are up to almost, we're at 119, if you want the exact number, 119 people, including us. Me, Dusty, Alex, and Drew will all be down there to watch Cags play Saturday, May 3rd. You've got till all the way up to game time to buy the ticket to the game. That is at 96.5thefan.com. You can follow that ticket link for a $10 ticket to the game. If you want the Cags shirt and are going on the road trip, you need that link separate. So just give us a text, 913-586-7965. Hit us up on socials at CodyBTap, at Alex Gold. We can send you that t-shirt link if you would like to order one. Those orders are due in by tomorrow morning because I'm going to put them in specific to the sizing that you are wearing. And so if you'd like one of those and are going on the trip, you just need to ask for the link and we will send it your way. Unable to put it on the website that way. So if you need it, we're happy to help out. Make sure that you are covered on that end as well. That'll be $10 as well. You can see the photos of that up on our social media page. But again, it's the Royals cursive script. Says Cags across it. Unfortunately, at this time, if you're not going on the trip, shirts aren't for you for now. We might try to do something later in town, but 119 people heading down to see Cags. Going to be an awesome time. Somebody in the group's going to throw out the first pitch. We're going to meet at Harbell's to hand out the shirts from 3:30 to 5 before. Should be an awesome time down there in Springfield.
Yeah, cannot wait to see you guys and appreciate everybody that's already signed up for it. Going to be a ton of fun. Right now, knock on wood, the weather looks awesome so far.
Oh,
for Saturday, May 3rd.
You're a little ways out,
but I did check. It's available.
About 10 days out and you're looking,
you can,
huh?
You can check on the old weather
app.
What's
it saying right now?
The latest?
Latest.
Springfield, Missouri for Saturday, May 3rd. 72 and sunny.
Well, I like the sound of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. 6 o'clock first pitch or so. Okay.
Let's hope that holds, man. Let's hope that holds. Going to be a ton of fun going down there.
He's going to hit a 514-foot home run. So prepare accordingly.
Oh, yeah?
Are you going to run
to the outfield to try to catch it? You're going to try to stand out there? When he's up to bat, are you not going to sit with us?
514, it's out of the stadium.
Yeah, but like, are you going to not sit in your seat and you're just going to be the guy that you hate for big league parks and you're just going to go?
No, I already told you Zach Campbell should
there.
Be permanently banned.
Yeah, that guy.
No, I will not be him. I think he should be permanently banned from every major league stadium.
Just try to catch a home run. I don't know the setup there at Springfield's ballpark.
If I get a foul ball, I'll give it to a kid.
I don't know if it's outfield seating there or if it's, you know, it's one of those where there's no seating in the outfield. I've never been to the ballpark.
Can I ask for a one-time exemption? If I catch a foul ball and it's from Cags, can I keep it for the garage sale?
Of course.
Because yeah, normally, don't steal it
from a kid. But
No. I catch it fair and square.
Yeah, then you can do whatever you want with it.
I know, but like generally speaking, I do subscribe to the give it to somebody else. It's a foul ball.
Mm.
give it to, but if it's for Cags, I feel like I should save it for the garage sale. That's all.
If he does hit a ball out of the park, like as soon as you hear this and you see Cody just get up and start running.
Yeah, we're going to run out of the stadium and go chase it down in the middle of the street.
I don't think I'd get there fast enough.
Well, of course not. But I mean, in terms of track, if the ball's out of the park, I'm sure people who are just walking on the streets of Springfield aren't.
Again, I don't know the outfield situation there at the ballpark at Springfield. Not aware of the seating or anything.
I don't know either. I did get yet another person last night to tell me that Hammond's field is really nice. Everyone is incredibly complimentary of their field. Yeah. I hope that we feel the same way when we're down there. I've never been, but a lot of people really did talk about it. They just told us that and to get cashew chicken because it's the original
the birthplace
home.
Of cashew chicken. Who knew?
Maybe you knew. Missouri Who would have thought, I should say. Of cashew chicken. No, I didn't know that before.
The 60s, back in the 60s. And Lambert's, which we won't be there in time to. The game will be over too late to go to Lambert's, unfortunately.
From the 816, Dusty might fight you for that ball. Yeah. It's for charity. You know.
He could. He'll shove you down to the ground, man. He'll box your ass
for
out.
For charity?
Yep. Yep.
That's just ice cold.
I could see it. I could see it happening.
Yeah, I guess so. Either way, come join the 120 of us who will be down in Springfield if you want to make the road trip down to Springfield for the day.
Let's talk about the draft a little bit. A couple days out, and we all know the lasting image of this Chiefs team was a blowout loss in the Super Bowl, and this is why I think a lot of the national narrative has been like they have to draft an offensive lineman in the first round because everybody's like, well, their offensive line is a disaster. Offensive line on the left side is questionable, no doubt. Center, right guard, right tackle is what it is. Center's one of the best. Right guard's one of the best. Right tackle is average.
Is what it is. It's what you said at the beginning.
And you're stuck.
Yeah.
Left tackle, right now, Jalen Moore. Left guard, Andy Reid said competition, Kingsley and Caliendo. You and I both are on the same page. No reason to draft a guard high at all. But you brought up how this team has, in Super Bowl losses, had similar type of issues.
I feel like they have the same. So they've been around for a long time under Brett Veach. And I would say, with the exception of Patrick Mahomes' very first year of a starter, the consistent Achilles heel of this team is offensive line. Not like, oh, some year or this year it's a different, because like a lot of times, teams' problems vary, right? In the very first year Patrick Mahomes was a starter, their Achilles heel was their defense. It stunk. It stunk out loud as a result of that. They had to score 79 points a game just to compete. They did very well at doing that. But it eventually was the thing that cost him. They couldn't get Tom Brady off the field, and instead he went down, and it was their Achilles heel. In every other playoff loss, I think you can make an argument that their single biggest weakness, the biggest reason why they lost the game, was the offensive line. So, like, at some point, it's like, I'm not saying they're not putting resources into it, because they clearly are. You're playing an offensive line either needs a more aggressive line or a better overall approach. I understand the single biggest issue here is how do you get tackle if you're picking, because they're a victim of their own success. How do you get tackle if you're constantly picking at 32? I'm not pretending like it's easy. One year they traded a pick for Orlando Brown Jr. One year they took Kingsley in the 60s. They've only had a first round pick four times under Brett Veach, so they haven't had that many cracks at it. But like at some point I would like a more aggressive line specifically with left tackle, even if that includes trade, not in the draft. If we're just saying you can't get the right tackle at 31.
I think for this offseason, though, to this point, they've done the most you could have done this offseason. Ronnie Stanley was never available. Jalen Moore, to me, was the best option after that, considering the contract and everything.
You're saying they just couldn't be more
aggressive
this year.
In the draft, we'll find out. Maybe they are going to be ultra aggressive, and they are going to trade up and get Josh Simmons. But remember, that's a 2026 plan. That's not a 2025 plan.
No, but I like the long-term approach to it.
I like
a long-term answer,
sure.
It turns out.
As would they, I think. So we're not doing this thing every single year, talking about who's going to play left tackle, and because they've had five different left tackles, right, in all five Super Bowls that they have played. I think, though, the one thing that gets lost from this past Super Bowl, yes, the O-line was a huge problem, but two other things were so evident, and this should impact their draft. They struggled to get after the quarterback, which is why we've talked about going and getting an edge rusher. That was also, as much as the O-line struggled, getting after Jalen Hurts was non-existent. The other part was, I still think, skill position-wise. Running back, not explosive. Wide receiver struggled to get open. All that
missing
can be
Rice,
true. All that
all
that can be true as well. So, yes, O-line for the second Super Bowl loss, it was a huge factor. But I think the Bucs Super Bowl loss still was way more of an O-line problem.
And that was an injury-related was part of the issue there.
That was way more of an O-line problem than this pass loss, believe it or not.
What would you, I guess, in last year's Super Bowl, do you think that they, like, let's just say you divvied up blame, but you only put it in those two categories. Mm-hmm. 100% of the blame, but you can either only put it on the offensive line or put it on the skill position players. What is your breakdown
I can only do 100%?
Saying, well, because I want a percentage of, like, which one you weight more. Is it like it would be 60-40 in favor of the offensive line, 70-30, 50-50?
Yeah, probably like 65% would be on the offensive line. And then the other 35, you know, are going to be skill position players. Yeah. Or I guess I could mention, I think defensive line was another thing that was very evident in the Super Bowl. They did not get pressure after the quarterback.
Sure. That was, I mean, and I'm not, but it just feels like the Achilles heel, like the thing that ends up being your death blow in too many of the years has been the can't block. Like, yeah, they just can't block. And it does feel like it comes up too often for the resources they put in it. I'm not saying Trey Smith, they didn't put a tremendous resource into Trey Smith yet. But they did just franchise tag him. We all think he's going to get a long-term contract here. So they're getting ready to put a tremendous resource. They put a tremendous resource into left guard. They put high resources into center. They put a heavy resource into right tackle.
Yeah.
So really, we're just down to left tackle. And they haven't tried there either. But at some point, I think we were talking about this when it came to baseball and like the outfield plan for the Royals and how that hasn't fully come to fruition yet. They're, you know, like, and I think they knew they needed outfield help. They were just trying to negate it with bullpen help. You do get credit for trying, as in you are not ignoring the problem. And I appreciate, as a team, when you recognize that a problem exists and you're not just trying to, like, be like, what do you mean? We don't have a problem at offensive line. But at some point, it's like, that's why I meant, like, that's why I said, like, the more aggressive line. Because to this point, I don't think they've been out of the game on offensive line. But I feel like they've taken, like, a medium approach. One first-round pick in Orlando Brown Jr. They didn't give him more money. That would have been the more aggressive version of that. Also pay him. And then every other pick has been 60, 80, 110 or after, right? Like, that's why I'd be okay with Simmons. It's not like my top choice because it doesn't help him this year. But if they took Simmons with the 31st overall pick, I don't know why we could, I can't possibly be mad at it.
No, the problem is, or I just don't think he's going to be there at 31.
I don't know. Issue. You and I both agree. I think he's going like 19 or 20.
I don't know if it's that high, but I would be stunned if they could stay at 31 and he's just sitting there for them.
Just kicking it.
That would be really, really surprising. All right. Another mock draft.
Is it Binkley's again, just to make sure?
No,
let's go over it for the later crowd.
No.
Okay.
If you want, you can go back and check out the podcast because we have Binks up. But we're going through this one now. This is Pro Football Focus. This is an interesting one, though. So it's not written by anybody at Pro Football Focus necessarily. It's all of the...
Is this an AI-generated mock draft?
No, or does everyone take a team?
Goodness. They have all of the analysts at Pro Football Focus. They are assigned to a particular team. In this case, for the Chiefs, it is Ben Lindsay. Again, he's going to be making
Should I know him?
He's making all the picks. I don't know. I don't know anybody.
You said it almost like it was like a name.
Like, oh, yeah, Ben. Yeah, Ben.
Except
Ben.
There's like a couple people.
Oh, of course. I'm sorry. Ben Lindsley. Yes, of course.
There's maybe two or three people I know on this list. But no, Ben Lindsay's not one of them. But anyways.
So I see Trevor Sikkema. He's come on this show.
Yep.
So
He is the one that's most recognizable, I think, to the three of us at least.
I was like,
no, no, no. Right,
where are we going?
So at 31, again, this is a 7-round mock draft. At 31, he has the Chiefs taking Walter Nolan out of Ole Miss. He is my draft crush. He's the guy who I think they should take. Obviously, outstanding upside, a guy that can fit alongside Chris Jones, be the foreseeable future guy at defensive tackle.
Yeah, I look, and this would be one of those, add this to the list of the names. If that was the pick, I would have zero issue with it. Do I favor some other guys? Sure. But this would be a pick where you would not have to talk me into it. Yeah, you would have to talk me into it whatsoever. Walter Nolan, we've talked quite a bit about actually over the last month or so, did start all 13 games. So you're getting somebody that has the durability that you would like to see. I think we've already gone through some of his pros and cons
he
a
fits
couple
right
times.
In.
Yeah.
I will say they've got, in this pick, they got Eamon Worry going 45. I thought he was going to go in like the teens or the 20s.
Safety, huh?
They've got Derek Harmon going in the 40s. So, like, they've got some guys available for the Chiefs at that pick, just as a side note, that's all.
At 63, Ariante Ursary out of Minnesota, the offensive tackle in the second round.
I mean, if he's available, I'll say, I would love this pick if he's actually available at 63. Now, I also liked Kingsley.
I was going to say, we had this very thing last year. We're like, oh, if same Kingsley's pick, there almost in the second round, man, love it.
I am willing to admit it would be harder to be, like, as gung-ho as we were with it.
Yeah.
But again, this is a guy who I think should go higher than this. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he might not. Should go higher than this. And also, that feels like the right range to take a chance on a left tackle. The prop, same thing applies, though. If you take Ursary with the 63rd overall pick, he needs to be in an open competition with Moore. It's too high of a pick to not give him a chance.
The description that the description is a developmental option that can sit behind Jalen Warren.
Yeah, I think, Cody, I think any tackle they take in the 2025 draft is a 2026 position battle.
I think if you take him in the first or second round, he should have
typically,
a chance to start.
Typically, I agree.
If they take Kelvin Banks, he has a shot.
Yeah, typically, I agree.
Let him start instead of Juwan Taylor and see if anybody will take him off your hands.
Nobody's going to do that. That's the problem. The contract is you're stuck with him for one more year.
It is cost prohibitive.
Yes.
Yep. Two third-round picks, of course, 66 and 95. At 66, Azariah Thomas, corner from Florida State, a name that has been mocked to the Chiefs before, more earlier on, one of those that we looked at probably about a month ago.
The thing I like the best about him is, for whatever reason, his name came up in a mock the other day, and the exact comp they gave for him, and this is probably why he's mocked here, was Legarius Sneed is what somebody comped him to.
Tall, length, very good press coverage.
Tall
corner.
Press corner, physical. Like, I don't know what you give us the Lance Zierlein take on
what's the last
Thomas?
Name again?
Azariah Thomas. Azariah. Apostrophe H.
Gotcha.
I bet you can find him. But somebody, like, it might not have been him, but somebody comped him to Legarius Sneed. So, like, if you're just looking for a guy that... I mean, I liked when Legarius Sneed was here. He's a very effective corner. Hmm. So, they don't have no take for him?
There we go. It's floating. There we go.
Loading, and...
Be a second.
Does Lance...
Be a little second.
Oh, okay. Well, once they get it figured out, we'll do it. But he's 6'2", 198 pounds... Good size corner, like you said, Drew. Press guy. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, there's a lot to like about
24th him. Most athletic corner out of combine guys. His comp on Lance Zierlein is another former Chief, or current Chief, I'm sorry, Jalen Watson.
Unbelievable.
So two Chiefs comps.
Again, if you're looking for a corner that fits there, like, that's the style of corner they like.
AFC scout quoted as saying his coverage got stickier this year. He just looks stronger and more under control. Not sure about his speed, though.
They don't care about fast corners. They should sometimes, but that has not been their top priority in corner play.
Roughhousing at breakpoints could lead to penalties. Roughhousing.
A little bit over-aggressive.
Making it sound like Patrick Swayze in Roadhouse. Like, he's just like...
He needs
he's just
more
doing roundhouse
seasoning,
kicks to people.
But he could become a good starter within 2 or 3 years.
Again, that kind of... Look, I got to be honest. The way you're describing him sounds like Legarius Sneed. It wasn't like he never got penalized. He's a physical corner. Physical corners with long arms who are tall. The Chiefs like that kind of player, so it does make sense. Who do they got at 95?
At 95, Cam Scadaboo.
Okay. Are we
fans
missing something?
Fans will like it. It's not that I think he's bad. I just don't think he's a good fit in Kansas
City.
I'll be totally honest.
If they didn't re-sign Kareem Hunt, this is 100% a good pick in my mind.
Okay. It just feels like you're redrafting Isaiah Pacheco, but maybe it's Kareem Hunt.
He's Kareem Hunt, and he just breaks. He's a breaking tackle machine.
Fans know the name is what it is. Fans know the name.
He was second behind... missed tackles force behind Ashton Gentry. I mean, he's right there in terms of vision.
Giddens goes two picks after him, and I like him as a fit better in Kansas City.
I don't know what Scadaboo's 40 was, but if he was 4.4, I think he'd be 100% be the second best running back in the class, or he'd be right there with Hampton.
I mean,
I just don't think he just doesn't have the speed, because his vision and ability to break tackles is insane.
And I guess he's I don't want to say Scadaboo's not explosive, but yes, the speed. No 40-yard dash at the combine, so I don't know.
Mystery
for
him. That might have even saved him.
I don't know what the pro day was. His brother, Cody Leo, played football at Sacramento City College in Bowling Green State. His comp is Jalen Warren.
So here's part of my issue with these toss-ins from Lance. What intern is he making dig up this Sacramento Bowling Green State stat just to, like, toss in there?
Hey, man, family lineage and very
trying
important.
Trying to set a word number? Family lineage? Mm-hmm. That's worse than the one I made fun of.
Yep.
I walked like that one back after I learned they were Division I.
What's that?
Bink would like their fourth round pick.
Okay, and?
Torrey Horton, wide receiver out of Colorado State.
Okay.
He mentioned him on Friday.
Right?
Really good wide receiver, but again, Colorado State's quarterback situation was awful last year, so that might have hindered his ability to showcase his talent a little bit more.
I will say that is easily wide receiver is one of the most difficult spots to evaluate in the draft because of that. College, Nate Taylor mentioned this last week, college football quarterback play is wretched. If you have been watching the product for a while, it, like, from a throwing to a wide receiver department is bad. And so, like, when that's the case, it's like trying to evaluate him, you're just like, man, I don't know. The guy can't get him the ball half the time. So you're just, like, judging it based on the route we think he was supposed to be running. But he is 6'2", 200 pounds. So
he's a big guy.
From a from a, I know, Gold, we've talked about this a lot. We would like a bigger bodied wide receiver every once in a while. It falls in that category.
Yep.
So the only other thing is speed me through. What was this, only a 4 round or was this a 7?
This is a 7.
Okay. Speed me through the 7th round picks, because we know that the Chiefs' other picks are all in the 7th.
Going to the 7th tight end, Jalen Conyers out of Texas Tech.
Again, it's a pick random two. Tight ends in the 7th.
Pick 2. Okay. Texas Tech, Mahomes connection. Have to draft him. There you
go. Safety Elijah Clark from Syracuse at 251. And then Mr. Irrelevant, Kanata Mumfield. Actually, a name that I know. Wide receiver out of Pitt. Solid player in college.
Two wide receivers, but both later. One guy in this. You know what the thing is, like with 7th? They've been so good at it, so I probably should care, Gold. I do not care the positional value in the 7th. Just take whoever you want.
Yeah, I mean, Mr. Irrelevant, it's irrelevant.
If you want to go off of what Mumfield did last year in terms of Mr. Irrelevant, 83 targets, 52 catches, 813 yards, average catch, 15.5 yards.
Yeah, productive.
He had good numbers. And Pitt didn't really have a... They had a solid quarterback situation with Eli Holstein, but yeah, it was okay.
But yeah, just like even like for a quarterback situation where like they didn't have the worst quarterback on the planet, it's still just like, as you mentioned, okay.
It's fine. Yeah. There aren't many. I mean,
so just not a ringing endorsement.
Well, in all honesty, like I think it's easy to take what Nate said last week and what we just talked about. How many quarterbacks are there in this draft that look A-plus caliber? There's maybe one, and that's a maybe. That goes to show you the college football talent, right?
I was actually looking at this as it relates to the draft because I thought it was just kind of fascinating. Because Cam Ward's going to go number one. Their GM just said, we're going to come to a consensus. We'll be picking at number one on Thursday night. Everyone knows it's Cam Ward. Over the last 10 years, how often do you think that the number one quarterback taken off the board was the number one quarterback in that draft? Because it's not even 50%. Like, even if we're making the argument of, like, maybe it's that guy, maybe it's this guy, it's even still not 50%.
Yeah, it's probably 30, 40%.
And what, the last decade or so?
Yes. I mean, last year, Jaden Daniels, everybody right now, if you redrafted, would take Jaden Daniels instead of Caleb Williams. Mm-hmm. Like the year Mahomes got drafted, you would obviously take him instead of Mitchell Trubisky.
In 2023, you'd take CJ Stroud over Bryce Young.
Yep, immediately.
No. 2022, that draft just stunk.
Yeah.
The number one
guy might still be the number one guy, but it's not exactly a ringing endorsement.
It definitely was not. You would take Brock Purdy over Kenny Pickett.
Literally the last quarterback taken is the one you would take instead, but that was just a wretched draft.
This one you would take Trevor Lawrence still, believe it or not.
Yes.
2020 Joe Burrow, you take Burrow over Tua and Justin Herbert and Jordan Love.
At least that one you couldn't mess up.
Man, holy smokes, this draft class was incredible. Joe Burrow, Tua, Justin Herbert, Jordan Love, Jalen Hurts.
Mm-hmm.
It's a damn good class.
Yeah, that one you just couldn't miss. Just take a quarterback.
Good year to have a top 10 pick and need a quarterback.
In 2019, Kyler Murray, you would definitely take over Daniel Jones. Dwayne Haskins, RIP. Drew Locke.
That was another really bad one.
You would take
winning almost by default there.
2018, you would take Josh Allen over Baker Mayfield.
No doubt.
You would take Lamar Jackson over Baker Mayfield.
Mm-hmm.
2017, obviously.
Josh Rosen was also taken to that draft.
You take Mahomes over him. 2016, this one's interesting. At first, it seemed like you would take Wentz over Goff. Now, I think you would take Goff over...
That's the thing. Are we doing the exercise as after 1 year? Or are we doing the exercise...
No, as of right now.
Well, then Goff.
Would you take Goff over Dak? Prescott?
Yes. Yeah. Now.
It'd be close, but I would still take... But that, like, I guess the point is, like, on Thursday night, when Cam Ward is the number one selected quarterback, and everybody agrees he is the top quarterback prospect, there's a 30% chance he's the best quarterback. So for the teams that, like, have these reservations on Sanders or Jackson Dart or one of these others, it's like, history's actually on your side. That you got just as good of a chance taking Sanders at 3-9-21 as getting the best quarterback in that draft, just as long as you take him in the first round or second round, because once you start getting the later rounds and your odds of finding the best quarterback are way off the board, then they do it finding Cam Ward at one.
I have one more for you to wrap up the decade. Who would you rather have now, Jameis or Marcus Mariota?
Jameis.
You still would take Jameis?
Yeah.
I would as well.
I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I'm like in love with either of those. Is there any other quarterback that got taken in that year? Or was that just another bad year?
There were only 7 quarterbacks taken that entire draft. Garrett Grayson, Sean Mannion, Bryce Petty, Brett Hundley.
Got it.
Trevor
just a horrible quarterback draft. Yeah, you know what, by the way, this year could end up being that too. This year might have a stronger likelihood of that than anything else.
I don't know if it'll be that bad, but that's...
I'm sure that's what they were telling them.
Because Marcus Mariota started. Jameis obviously started. I mean, Trevor Siemian had to start, but I don't know if anybody else. There's only 2 quarterbacks that started a game.
Yeah. I just like the way the conversation around the quarterbacks this year, it really interesting because I think there's some people that, and it's fine if you don't have to like every quarterback and how they operate. I think there's a ton of people that just don't like Shedeur Sanders because of his dad and his personality more than it is a quarterback. Like, somebody texted in, and I'm just picking on the person that texted in because I've seen this a lot. I don't know if you, whoever's texting in, is this person.
You're just using this as a jumping off point.
Sure. But, you know, for those someone texting, he's not a first-round talent, or I think he sucks. Why do you think he sucks? Because, look, it's fine. I think a lot of you don't like Shedeur Sanders because of the off-field stuff, not because you actually don't think he's a good quarterback. And I'm not telling you Shedeur Sanders is going to be an all-pro. Not at all. I think he's going to be a star in this league for a while. I really do. But I think so much of the hate towards him is because you don't like how they operate at Colorado.
Yeah,
I mean, I think that's a huge chunk of it. That's fine, but like, can we at least admit?
It's hard to put the personal feelings aside sometimes, yes.
And there's some teams, by the way, that are doing the same thing that you're doing, right? There's some teams that also just like, we just don't want to deal with it. We don't know what's going to be.
They got to find out if they've made a huge mistake or not. They'll find out in a couple of years.
Yeah, up next, let's get to what's trending, and then you'll hear our conversation with the general manager of the Kansas City Royals, J.J. Bacolo. We asked him about where the offense is at, in particular, what's going on with Vinny Pasquantino at the plate. Thanks for hanging out with us here on a Tuesday. Beautiful day in Kansas City. Maybe you're heading out to Kauffman Stadium later on tonight. Remember, Vern's On Deck show comes your way at 5:30 as the Royals open up a series against the Colorado Rockies. Earlier today, the general manager and the executive vice president of the Kansas City Royals, J.J. Bacolo, joined us, as he does every couple weeks here on the show, usually at 10:30 on Tuesdays. We start our conversation with him asking about this offense and just how concerned is he with the current production?
Well, I mean, obviously we're struggling, but, you know, this is part of the season where we just have to really go back and check our processes with each individual guy, because I think they all are doing something a little bit different right now. And it's a tough stretch, but, you know, we've been through this before, and you just got to know what it is that gets you out of it. And you just got to kind of wait out the process and hopefully guys get going. I'm glad we're back home, and I know our guys like playing at home, and today's the start of a new stretch.
Is this part of what the appeal was in a guy like Jonathan India? Like, I was wondering, like, just going back to like this stretch or even last year when you guys went through a couple of stretches offensively that were kind of tough, is when you've got a team that has guys who could work on the on-base percentage part of it, is it harder to avoid stretches like this if guys aren't regularly just getting on base, whether they're hitting or not?
Well, if I understand your question correctly, you know, Jonathan India is a very consistent player, and he's going through it right now as well. But, you know, his process is still good. He's swinging at good pitches. He's just not, you know, making consistent hard contact, which we know he will. His career path tells you, his history will tell you that that's something he does. And when you're more veteran guys are being a little bit more productive and more consistent, it takes pressure off the bottom of the lineup. You know, right now it's just kind of a trickle down effect. I mean, it's, you know, outside of Bobby and Michael, all guys have gone through their struggles, but these guys are pros. They know that this is part of the season. You know, one day can change the course of the next 2 weeks. You know, that's just the way the game goes. It's actually what I think everybody enjoys about the game. Nobody likes going through the struggles, but 162 games is hard to get through. And when you embrace the good with the bad, they're the guys that play a long time in the big leagues, and that's what our guys are going through right now.
You guys were in the middle of a 17-game stretch without a day off. You get the win on Sunday. At least from the outside, it felt like maybe everybody could just take a little bit of a deep breath, reset with the win on the flight home, and you're off yesterday, and then, of course, back at it tonight.
Yeah, that sounds good to me. That's what I was thinking, but it was great to get that win. I mean, Detroit's playing very well right now. It was a tight game. You know, Carlos Estevez did a wonderful job going two innings there. You get the win, you know, you get on that plane, you get an off day, you regroup. It's a beautiful day today. The weather's outstanding. So, you know, you just got to be optimistic that today's the day that, you know, gets us going in the right direction. But Sunday's win was a big win. You always, you know, you want to win every game, but when you're going through a stretch like that, you want to get that last win, so at least to end the tough road trip on a positive note.
I guess on the flip side, JJ, obviously the wins aren't coming with it yet, but like, you've got to feel internally, if the offense or when the offense finds some more rhythm, the starting pitching looks like it's going to give you a chance to win 162 times in a row based on the way this has started so far. Where are you guys at in that process? And how comfortable are you now that, because you had to give up a starter in the offseason in Brady Singer, how confident are you that this is what we're seeing in the starting pitching is here to stay?
Well, it's great. I mean, everything starts on the mound. And even though we've lost a handful of games, there were a lot of tight ones in there as well, because the pitching is doing what it's supposed to do. And then when you think about, we've got four guys on the IL right now, pitchers, that more than likely would have been on this team, you know, opening day. So when you look at that, I think we're weathering that storm very well. You hold your breath, you know, when Lucas got hit with that batted ball, you hold your breath because there's only so much depth you can really have. But luckily, Lucas is fine. They're doing a great job. The starters are keeping us in the game. The bullpen's done a great job. So, you know, I think that's, without a doubt, the positive right now. And that's what we were built on last year. You know, our pitching was really good and our offense scored just enough runs and you end up having a good season. But that was last year, and now we got to move on and figure things out this year. But the pitching certainly has been a positive.
You mentioned Lucas Ursek. Is the expectation that he'd be available then tonight?
Yeah, he was actually available on Sunday. We didn't want to use him because of the off day. You get an extra day. But he would have pitched. If that game went, you know, 12, 13 innings, more than likely he was going to come into the game. It worked out really well that we didn't have to use him and got the win. And then he gets the off day, and he's certainly available tonight.
How are things progressing for Hunter Harvey? Since we're already in the bullpen and talking about guys, how's he looking?
He started his throwing program this week, so that's a positive. You know, the good thing about relievers is it doesn't take them much to get back into the flow of things. They're throwing one inning at a time for the most part. So I don't know what the timetable is. It'll all depend once he gets off the mound, how he's feeling. But everything so far has been exactly as we expected.
We're talking to the general manager of the Kansas City Royals, J.J. Piccolo, here on 96.5 The Fan. On Saturday, you guys made the decision, of course, to option MJ Melendez to AAA. You spoke about that decision and the thought process with that. Now that he's going to be in AAA, what do you guys need to see from him for him to have an opportunity in the future, potentially to come back with the big league club?
Oh, we said several times that we liked the work that he did in the offseason, and really what we were seeing through spring training and then even, you know, during the regular season is even though he was doing some good things and trying to quiet things down in his lower half, his timing was still off. It wasn't synced up, his lower body and his upper body. They made the coaches and MJ made a decision before the New York series that they were going to make a small tweak in his stance where his posture is a little bit more upright, trying to maintain what he's doing with the lower half and find that rhythm. And in a very short sample, you know, he hit the homer off of Freed. He hit another ball really good the next night and lines out to end the game. So we feel like he's on the right track, but it's a timing issue. And with timing issues, it takes repetition. And when you're doing it against the best in the world, it's hard to work on those things. So we were patient with it. We were hoping that he would find it. We believe that he will. So now he's back in AAA. He reported yesterday to play or Sunday to play, and they got rained out. So he's anxious to get to work and handling it very well. And he'll be in the lineup tonight against Toledo.
How's his, you know, I guess the handling it really well, it's got to be really tough for a guy who's been in the big leagues for three straight years and then make those adjustments and then end up in AAA. Like, how do you guys internally handle those conversations? And you don't have to tell me what you told him, but how do you handle those conversations where we do actually still believe in the changes you're making? I know it feels like it's coming with less production now, but we need you to stick to it.
Well, the communication is really key. And the night that we sent him down, we didn't even get into it that night. But Alex Zumwalt and the other hitting coaches had a discussion with him Friday night, they had a discussion with him. And then we had a conference call yesterday with all the coaches in AAA because I think the communication is very important and we're consistent in what he's hearing. But he's a major league player. He needs to participate in this as well. You know, if something's not feeling right, a certain drill is not, you know, getting the result or the feel that he's trying to accomplish, then, you know, we need to change the drill. But a lot of it is drill work to try to create that timing and then go into the game with a free mind that the work he just did will transfer into the game. And, you know, it's tough, you know, and he's been a big leaguer for 3 years. It's tough. You know, it's sometimes we've been through this before. Sometimes there's a little bit of a sigh of relief to catch my breath, start over, and kind of a new beginning, you know, and that was the sense I got from MJ. And then even with a follow-up discussion I had with him on Saturday night, you know, he's anxious to get to work. He was packing his place here, and he was driving to Omaha the next morning, which is exactly how we want guys to react. And, you know, just to go back a little bit, it's very similar when Alex Gordon got sent down in 2010. He was in Omaha the next day and got to work and eventually came back and was a very productive major league player for many more years. So, you know, that's the approach we're taking. As long as the player understands it, it certainly feels like MJ does, and he'll go down to AAA, get this thing ironed out, and come back up and be productive for us.
Fans will remember and mention guys like Gordo or Moustakas who were sent down. As a general manager, like, do you use those even as examples to the player, or do you just say MJ's probably well aware of that already?
Yes, you do at times. It just, you kind of got to read the room. You know, there's a time and place for that. You know, when you first give a player news like that, they certainly don't want to hear about anything else. I mean, they're human beings, you know, it's bad. Sure. It's bad news, but there's a time and place for it. And I know that MJ and Mike Moustakas are actually friendly, you know, so I wouldn't be surprised if they're talking right now. And guys that went through things like that, you know, that player can identify with the players going through it now, and that can be very helpful. So we just got to, you know, keep, you know, referring back to history. You know, I said this the other day, there's very few players in the world that never got option. They get to the big leagues, they get option back to the minor leagues. I don't know what the percentage is, but it's a huge percentage of players get option back. I remember having a similar conversation with Brady Singer a couple years ago, and he came back and was outstanding. So, you know, we've been through this before, you know, and how the player handles it mentally and then the physical work he does will really dictate what the future is like for that player.
I wanted to ask you about another player in the lineup since you were talking about processes. Vinny was on MLB Network. He was talking a little bit about bat speed and maybe that was speeding him up. And for a guy who was a heavy producer for you guys last year, what are you guys seeing from like Vinny's at bats as far as getting him up to speed?
The thing that Vinny's always done so well is his pitch selection is outstanding. And right now he's getting pounded inside pretty good. A lot of cutters in, balls off the plate in that he's, you know, making a pass at and foul, pulling foul. We thought over the last 7 to 10 days he started to make that adjustment. He actually had an opposite field hit the last day at Kauffman Stadium before he went on the road trip. When Vinny is using the left center field gap, that means his timing's right and his pitch selection is good. I did read a little bit about the bat speed thing, and it was a goal of his to increase bat speed, but that's not too uncommon. But if you look at, you know, the correlation between bat speed and who the most productive hitters in the game are, the best hitters in the game aren't at the top of the bat speed ranking. You know, I think last year when they came out with that, Luis Arraez was last in baseball and he's won 2 batting titles. So it's timing, you know, your swing, your bat speed to sync it up with your lower half and how you deliver the bat is going to be more of the predictor of how well you square up a ball, which then usually leads to hard hit. And now you get your hits. So, you know, it's an interesting thing. I give players a lot of credit. They challenge themselves all the time. They want to get better. And, you know, you would think swinging the bat faster would be a better thing. But for some guys, it's just not, you know. And Vinny will figure it out. He's a really good hitter. He's going to figure it out. And when his pitch selection improves, like we've seen for many years with him, he'll hit. You know, he's a very good hitter. He's a very good major league hitter. And it's the quality of the at-bat that I think will dictate the results more so than anything. And right now, the quality of the at-bat isn't what we're used to seeing from Vinny. But he'll get there. Who knows how long it'll take, but he will get there because he's too good of a hitter.
We mentioned the rotation, JJ. I did want to ask you before we let you get out of here, a couple of guys in the bullpen. Daniel Lynch, how much has he earned more high leverage opportunities considering, I know his scoreless inning streak ended, but he has been better than I was expecting in kind of those leverage moments as he got more of those. What do you guys view Daniel Lynch's future is in those big time innings?
I think exactly what's happening. You know, he really, last year when he got up, he was more towards the bottom of the bullpen. As we got into the playoffs, you know, or in that stretch run, he was being used in higher leverage situations, and the same thing's happening right now. Came into a close game the other day in Detroit. Even though he gave up a run, he did a good job. I mean, the base hit that they scored the run was just a well-placed ball. It wasn't hit hard. So he's done a great job. And like any other pitcher, the more success they have, the more the manager is going to want to use them in high leverage situations. And that's what's happened with Daniel. So it's really an advantage for us, you know, being left-handed, because you can pick your spots when you want to use them. We saw Angel Zerpa do the same thing last year, and he may not be throwing the ball as well right now as he did last year, but Angel is very similar when you look at his career projection and how he's gotten to where he's gotten to. So it's great for Daniel Lynch. It's great for our team, because the more options you have in the bullpen, the better off you're going to be through a long season.
J.J. Piccolo, Royals General Manager, Executive Vice President, kind enough to give us some time here. We'll check in a couple weeks. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Thank you.
You got it. That was J.J. Piccolo earlier today. He joins us every couple weeks on the show talking about where this team is at. I thought some good insight, just at least in the thought process of what they're seeing from someone like Vinny. And obviously, we got in depth there talking about MJ Melendez and what they need to see from him. But on, when it comes to Vinny, the bat speed thing is really interesting. I mean, he referenced that, you know, some of the best hitters in baseball. It's not because they're that amazing bat speed in top of the league or anything like that. And what's the adjustment? You know, it's kind of like the cliche stuff, like, get back to the basics a little bit.
Well, and like, I think if you do increase your bat speed, it might take you longer than normal to get used to that as it relates to the rest of the timing of your swing. The way he talks about Vinny is like, that's a great hitter who has great plate management. Like, I feel like that's one of the players they are the least concerned about in this grouping of guys who aren't hitting. Because Father Time, you could argue for Salvador Perez, the hit changes and stuff off, you can argue for MJ. Like, there are, but like with Vinny, it's like no part of his career has suggested the idea that this would be a regular, long-lasting problem. Were you tempted at all to ask him not to call up Jack Caglione before May 3rd?
I almost said, hey, by the way, I don't know if you know, we're doing a road trip to Springfield May 3rd. Can you just hold off on any potential change with your minor league system and AA in particular until after May 3rd? I was tempted, yeah.
We got 120 people heading there. If you want to get tickets, $10 a piece. In Springfield, Saturday, May 3rd at 96.5thefan.com. If you have already ordered tickets or are going to order tickets and join us, you have till tomorrow to order your shirts. We will send you that link separately if you need it. It's an optional thing at 913-586-7965 or at Cody B. Tapp or Alex Gold on Twitter. If you need it, just let us know. Still time for that. That's only for the people going on the trip. You will pick it up day of game only at Harbell's from 3:30 to 5.
Someone was
Harbell's,
given
Harbell's.
Someone was giving Drew a hard time. Like, would we ever thought if we would have told you 2 years ago, Drew, that you would be going to a minor league game in Springfield before a game at Arrowhead? You would have been like, huh?
I mean, technically, I've been to a minor league game before going to Arrowhead, but. Yeah.
No, like in Springfield. Springfield.
I would have
Have you gone out to the Monarchs? It's right by you. Have you gone out to, thinking of not affiliated ball, obviously.
I have not gone to a Monarchs game. I've driven by many times.
Yes, right by you. Right by you, man.
Yep.
Kim, yeah, going there instead of a before era. That's crazy.
That is wild.
That is wild. Have you been to K-State or Missouri football games yet either? Since you're a big college football guy?
He went to,
I've been to a K-State game, hoping to get out to a KU game now that they're at the stadium, actually.
Yeah, you're going to go check out the new stadium in the fall, for sure. All right, guys. Hope you have a good rest of your Tuesday. Enjoy the awesome weather. The Drive with C-Dot and Rob up next.